You know, real courage is doing things despite being afraid. It's not not feeling fear. Fear is often a very rational response to something, especially if it's something that matters to you, because the fear of failure, if that thing matters to you, failure is an actual problem that really hurts.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
It feels so long. I feel like it's been like a month since we recorded.
Yeah, I appreciate your... So we took a week off, and also I think the one before that we had recorded a little early, so it kind of maximized the timeline by mistake. But yeah, very close friend of mine, legendary pianist Mike Lang, had cancer and died, and kind of took a week. You know, I took off this show. I took off Play Watch Listen. I canceled quite a lot of meetings, and just sort of decided to give myself some space.
Yeah, that's good.
If anybody is curious, I made a video about him on my YouTube channel. Amazing guy. We don't need to talk about it here, of course, but that's. I'm to blame for skipping a week because I...
Well, actually, that video was very useful for me because I sent a link to friends that asked about the podcast and, you know, they were a little bit, not worried, but curious. And I guess it was better for me to just send that link and give all the information more than they needed. And so, yeah.
I appreciate it. But anyway, in the meantime, it's not really our topic, but I feel like it may end up segueing to it. But you've just finished reading.
I already
forgot the name of it.
I'm glad my mom died from Jeanette McCurdy.
Yeah, Jeanette McCurdy.
I believe everybody here will understand when I explain this weird thing that I have. It's like it's sadness. When you finish something and you don't know exactly what to do next. I just now finished that book like a few minutes ago, like 30 minutes ago. And I have that feeling of like, damn, but also the content of the book is like, damn, this is nothing. This is just insane. I will recommend this to a lot of people. I actually have been mentioning to my sister and a couple of friends already, and we have been poking on our Discord, our book club. We have a little book club. Sometimes we mention things that we're reading in the moment, and yeah, I snap some shots of a chapter in particular that I felt like, holy shit, I need to share this. I need to bend, but I don't want to be too spoilery.
Tell me if this is an accurate summary, but in case somebody listening doesn't know what we're talking about, this is a woman who was a child actor.
Yeah.
Whose mother died from cancer when she was like 18 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Right? She was the classic sort of pageant kid style of, you know, JonBenet type, where the mother pressured her enormously to be an actor and to be a star and to be famous and to try to have all the glory she never had for herself.
Yep.
And it's a book, you know, it's literally called I'm Glad My Mom Died, because it's about the sort of the trauma, even though she became a very successful child actor,
mm-hmm.
Still all the shit she dealt with. You've sent me some screenshots of a few pages that even reading them without any bigger context, without mm-hmm. like the chapters leading up to it or any of that kind of thing to know how this fits into the bigger picture, is striking for the just ungodly things that this kid had to deal with, like the real parental nightmare kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, it seems like she writes in a very funny way, but it's insanely heavy.
Yes.
Subject.
Yes, it's that's why I just don't know how to explain, because yes, it's very dark and heavy, but also it has a lot of humor here and there, and it has made me laugh a few times. But yeah, it's I definitely will recommend it to anybody, even if they're not feeling related to, if they don't like the Hollywood, you know,
the kind of industry language of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no question that it reads in a bit of an insider kind of a way, but I think from what I understand, from I saw little glimpses of interviews with her as she's been promoting the book, a huge motivator for her is that the shared relief that comes when you realize somebody else has gone through some serious trauma. Like, that doesn't have to be identical to the trauma you went through,
mm-hmm.
to feel comforted knowing that somebody came out the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And that I feel like is a big part of why she did this. So it doesn't matter if you're not related to the industry, you have no concept of acting, or maybe even creative work in general is like totally alien to you. The very idea that struggling with trauma is so universal, she's telling her story, her version, in the hopes that it might mean something to somebody else. That was my takeaway from
right.
the little bits I've seen from her, is because there's always value in reading about
uh-huh.
someone's trauma. And she makes it very easy to read. Like, most trauma is so horrible that you read it and you're like, you know, this is like unreadable. It's just so real or so painful that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like the ultimate example of being told to, like, take your medicine. It's good for you, even if it tastes bad. That's like the extreme version,
yep.
you know?
Yeah.
But she makes it, she packages it in a very charming
mm-hmm.
way.
I know it's not your cup of tea.
I got 1,000 books I'm excited about.
Yeah, I know that.
So, yeah, it's a little difficult, especially when I've been able to vicariously get so much from you. I know it's obviously not the same because I haven't read it all, but you've told me a bit, and I've read, you know, a handful of passages, and I can kind of connect the dots and
yeah.
feel like, you know, I got something really meaningful even just by being exposed to it.
Right.
It's pretty impressive. I never mm-hmm. heard of her until you mentioned this book. I never watched those kinds of shows.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, it will invariably tie. But what is your proposal for our topic today?
Well, I was looking at our list, and I feel like today will be very compelling to talk about failure. Because I think personally, what? I've been feeling a lot of that lately. So I guess why not? Let's just vent.
Therapy via podcasting. What? I was going to ask what made you choose it, but I guess your answer is that you've been feeling that lately.
Yeah, I'm just being very artistically blocked. I haven't been able to fulfill my promises with, you know, commissions and things that I have pending, and it worries me a lot. But I can't. I still am in the phase of not being able to wash it off and then do the things that I have to do. So, yeah.
Have you seen that cartoon that's like the, I'm too stressed to get anything done, and then it's like, okay, so then relax, but I can't relax, all I want to do is work, and so it's like this, the spend all of your time off feeling guilty, that's all you're allowed to do.
Yep,
it's so
exactly,
it's so real.
Exactly. I think reading this book was my way to try to forget that I have so many things there waiting for me. But also, I mean, it's very good. So I got hooked very quickly, but I finished very quickly. And now I'm like, okay, now what should I do?
I've developed this pattern of taking walks when I shift gears, but it actually started from like years ago. The first times I did it, I was motivated by that same feeling of like, I can't figure out what to do, or I don't even necessarily feel motivated right now. So what's something I can do that sort of lets me convince myself I'm being productive? And it's like taking a walk,
mm-hmm.
good for the health, it's nice to get outside,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. I ended up kind of becoming addicted to it, and I take walks multiple times a day now, you know, in the middle of the day. And it's like if I have a phone call, I'll time my phone call so that I'm walking around while I'm on the phone. I'm sure everybody that's talked to me on the phone for the last like 3 years, they're just used to hearing me breathing heavily because I'm always walking and it's 1,000 degrees outside.
Yeah.
But in any case, yeah, that it's interesting to call that failure though, because it's often part of the process. Like you need time to.
I need time, but when it lasts as long as it has been right now for me.
How long is that?
Well, you know, I'm even embarrassed to say that a friend has commissioned a painting that's been sitting there for months. But they're like, it's okay, just get it whenever you have time. It doesn't matter. She's been super supportive, and I know she'll know it's her that I'm talking about whenever she hears this, but I can't get it done for some reason. I can't just sit in front of my easel and fucking do it, because I don't know why I'm so afraid to step in this project for some reason. I just don't feel I don't know. It is super shitty feeling, and it, the more I wait, the less worth I feel of this.
Yeah, well, I know that feeling very much. That's why I said it's maybe part of the process, though, because sometimes things need time to digest. Because if you just, like, if you had a deadline, I must mail it Friday.
Yeah, then exactly.
You could paint something.
Of course.
And you'd probably just be unhappy with the result. You'd probably just be like, well, I hate it, but at least I got it done.
Exactly. Yeah, I probably need to do that myself. I don't even need her to tell me I need it for my birthday or whatever. But
right.
But yeah, I don't know. It's one of those. I know it's, hopefully it's not a big deal. I know she's very supportive and it's not a rushed thing. But... but I can't help feeling this way, and I can't, the worst part is that I can't start, it's I feel the guilt if I do something else. I've been, you know, I finished a few things here and there, like for Patreon, or like this portrait I made of Jeanette after, you know, after the book thing. If anybody don't follow me on social media, I posted a picture of a painting I did for her, and I had the chance to hand it to her personally, which is super cool. It was a little rushed, the whole thing, you know, like
it was a signing event,
and it was a little, you were not able to take any pictures. I actually asked beforehand, and the woman told me, you're not able to give her anything yourself, like you have to set it on the table and I'll let her know after the thing that it is from you. And I was like, heck no, I'm just gonna hold into it and I will give it to her. And so yeah, I kind of like ignore her and just went my way, you know.
Yeah, well,
but yeah,
you
I did
it, you did it the right way.
I gave it to her, and the only thing she could tell me it's like, oh, nice gold touches or something like that. I can't even remember because I was a little nervous, but there was no chance to explain anything to her, and I just hope that she can see it for herself, you know. She can anyway, this is not even what I was getting into.
No, but that piece, like, I think you mentioned it because you basically did have a deadline for making that one.
Aha, uh-huh, so I made it. But also I feel, at the same time, I felt guilt. Why am I even doing this for somebody that didn't even ask for, when I have this pile getting bigger and bigger? And this is actually people that ask me for stuff. And I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. I don't have the answers.
Well, I can tell from my experience, my version of similar situations in the past, is that there have been times where I avoided working on something like, you know, important, to work on something that was really technically optional or less important. Even if it was important to me, it was a thing that I know. Like if person A is paying me for something and person B is not, I owe it to person A to give them the priority. Like that's just basic professionalism and logic. But there have been times where I've kind of done what you're describing. And I don't know if this was just me rationalizing it or if it's true. I think it's actually true though, that I was kind of afraid to not do a good job, essentially afraid of failure. And that made me think, well, I can continue to let it process while I do this other thing. And that way it has an even better chance at being good, mm-hmm, you know? Because mm-hmm. that fear of failure is powerful. I see it in my own. I have a Discord that's mostly young composers. And I see that as a hidden subtext in a lot of what they talk about when they talk about their concerns. There's a lot of art is, there's a lot of fear that artists have. And the great artists are the ones that tend to figure out ways to get over their fears. That's like, because the great artists tend to be fearless. That's kind of what makes them able to make great art.
Mm-hmm.
But our natural state is to be afraid because the world is scary and doing something new, we're social creatures. And when an artist does something new, it feels like it might be alienating to fellow humanity, you know, where you're going to cast yourself out because you've got this different way of doing things and everyone's going to look at you and think you're a crazy person and cast you out of society. So there's a certain amount of fear baked into all artistic creation, I think. And so the fear of failure is like kind of doubles down on that because you're like, if I fail, I'll fail at the art. If I succeed, I'll be sort of weird and too different. You know what I mean? So it's like paralyzing, I think, for a lot of people. But the fear, that's where it's a real thing to also be afraid of success. That's an odd, I've seen that before. I've seen people be like with so much talent, so much ability and not take these chances. And I think it's because it's like they're so comfortable in the struggle that
sure.
success is weirdly scary to them.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that. Not that I'm calling myself, I'm so talented, but so afraid. But
you are. It's funny you say that because you. I was even just saying to Tina how you took a lot of risks. You know, you really had to, like, take a gamble on your life to move to the U.S. You know, you had to kind of. You had never done anything like that. You never lived outside Costa Rica. You weren't even confident in your English, and to move to America with all of that, you know, very few people have the courage to do a thing like that.
Well, I don't know. So love makes you do stupid things,
maybe,
I guess.
Maybe so.
That was my stupid thing. But
but the point is the fear of failure didn't hold you back.
Oh, well.
You still did it.
Yes, I was full of it, but yeah, I did it. I guess it looked very...
Full of it, meaning what? You think
I was full of fear. I'm talking about fear.
I'm undoubtedly, but I'm saying you still, as my mother would say, you felt the fear and did it anyway. You were like, I'm not going to pretend I'm not afraid, but that's not going to stop me. You know, real courage is doing things despite being afraid. It's not feeling fear. Fear is often a very rational response to something, especially if it's something that matters to you, because the fear of failure... If that thing matters to you, failure is an actual problem that really hurts. So the fear of it is a very rational fear.
Yeah,
you know, like, for sure. I remember on Journey, I was so afraid that the music was going to be the weakest part of the game because I could see how brilliant the rest of the game was. And I was like, I don't want to be the one thing holding this back. And that's a real possibility. Yeah. I really could have ruined the game if I... you know, screwed up the music because it, you know, obviously the music is very exposed as part of the experience. And so my fear was not unfounded or irrational. And it's so same with you coming here, you know, every reason to feel afraid. That's why I say it's courageous. Cause you then were like, yeah, and whatever, I'm on my way.
I do what I want.
So I guess the question is how do any of us restore that courage? Like if you find yourself paralyzed and fear is maybe what's holding back, a fear of failure or whatever, the question is how to light the fire and push through anyway. I don't know that I know the
answer. I probably, in my case right now, like today, I think I think it probably should be shame. I am ashamed. So I guess shame is going to push me through this. I am so embarrassed with my friend, with this person that trust on my abilities to make this piece. And I think shame in this case is key to at least.
That's a sort of okay temporary solution.
Well, you know, well, I can't give you like a happy answer. I am trying, I'm being honest with myself. I'm not trying to give any of you guys listening to just make the episode magical or anything. I'm just, I happen to pass through this and I'm just, as I said, I'm venting. So I hope it's enough.
Here's a related question. Have you ever made a painting for somebody, a commission of any kind, painting being the most common, for somebody where they weren't happy with it? Has anybody ever said to you, like, I'm going to be honest, I was hoping for X and you gave me Y? Like, this notion of failure, have you ever actually failed?
Okay, in a finished painting, I've never, I don't think, or at least I don't recall, or maybe it was too traumatizing for me to remember now, but I've never had that experience. I only had feedback for when I was designing something, like a specific, I don't know, character or something like that. I got feedback, and that's part of the process. That's not me failing. That's just me getting through.
Yeah, of course. So, not even close. Like, it's, that is very much how it works.
Yeah. But I guess the closest is, like, I did this design, this character, and delivered, and they were okay with it. And now the character changed completely and is not the same as it was before. But that is, I know that it's not my fault. That is just the project evolving.
Yeah, exactly. Not even close to failure. I mean, there are tons of projects where by the time it reaches the finish line, you know, very, very little of your original vision survives, even if you're continuously part of it. I mean, that is 100% just the nature of working in a collaborative environment on a film or a game. Or
I guess also failure is very subjective, for depending of who sees it.
Yeah.
For example, for me, moving here was a step up in my life, but I had to finish my relationship in Costa Rica because it was very like automatic.
That's a good word.
So it didn't have what I needed to make me stay there. So I think that is possibly a failure for him in that case. I think it obviously is a failure for both.
I mean, I'm an optimist, but I look at that as saying if a relationship is not working, the relationship ending, choosing to end it is definitionally not failure. I mean, you could maybe make a very technical argument that
right,
the relationship failed, I guess, but both people deserve to be happy, and if the relationship is
exactly
not working, then failure would have been to just sort of mindlessly stay together.
Right.
And so I, you know, to me, that feels very basic. This is why I was curious, because theoretically, a version of failure for you would be if someone commissioned a painting, you delivered it, and they just said, look, I'll, you know, like, this is not an unrealistic scenario. They could go, look, I'm going to pay you for your time, but I want you to know I'm going to, like, the spot on my wall that I was imagining this for, I'm going to commission somebody else because this is not actually what I was hoping for.
It's not unimaginable
that someone could say that.
I just remember, and this was a very, very traumatic experience. And I remember because I showed you pictures and I show you the conversations. It was with this people that asked me for costumes to copy some like Lady Gaga and then Katy Perry. Do you remember that? I remember sending you pictures.
Vaguely.
Very, uh-huh. So I did like the Lady Gaga meet dress and like this crazy, super crazy designs. And I was actually happy with them. They looked pretty cool in pictures. And obviously it was not meat. But I don't know what were they expecting. They didn't like it. And it was this woman, probably, I don't know. I want to believe that she was having a really bad day, or I don't know, maybe she was passing through a weird situation, like a family or something. I don't know. But she was so rude, and she called me names, and she didn't like the job, and they didn't pay what they say they were going to pay. It was awful.
I'm remembering that now.
And I remember feeling so shitty. And I remember it was the first time I felt that way, like super disappointed with myself and super angry with this person for yelling, you know, these words.
I mean, that's just so unprofessional. If somebody's unhappy with the work, they just simply need to... First off, they could say nothing. They could just pay you, cut their losses, and say, thank you very much, goodbye, yeah. Have a good life,
yeah.
And keep it to themselves. If they wanted to offer, you know, if the process, like if there was a lot of back and forth and they never felt like they were communicating effectively with you or you weren't hearing them, then I think it's not unreasonable for them to go, look, for the future, these are the things that didn't work for me in this process, and that's why I'm going to go find someone else now. Like, that's a fair thing as well. It's hard to call any of those failures for me because I remember Troy once described it. I don't remember what I was talking about at the time, but I made some comment about feeling like I'd messed something up or whatever. And he was like, this is just the next chapter of your story, though. You know, like it's not like you died. It's just like, here's the next thing that happened to me, and tomorrow the next thing will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so failure, like when you're reading Jeanette's book, you know, you don't like on page 75 suddenly go, there's her failure, and I'm gonna like stop reading the book now, or whatever. Like, it all just feels like it's points on the story, you know? And this is a thing I have often said when I am asked to speak to young composers. I've always said that that one of the things that I think is very exciting about particularly being a composer, a freelance composer who doesn't have like a you know, 9-to-5 traditional employment kind of relationship, but I work job to job, is that failure is literally impossible, true failure, because your only options are to keep going or to quit. But I don't see how failure actually works, because it's not like, you know, if Matt Nava had decided he was unhappy on the Pathless while we were working and decided, you know what, I gotta fire you, it sucks, but this is just not working and I don't think we're ever gonna get there. It's not like he then has the ability to like ripple that out into every other opportunity I'll ever have and cut off my whole career.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, it would suck and I'd probably spend a day on my couch, you know, curled up in the fetal position. But it's like you could call it, I guess, a short-term failure, but it's more like, I always think of it, it's more like it's just a kick in the nuts. It's just a, today fucking sucks. As Richard Kraft would say, shit, fuck, next. Like don't pretend you're not upset, process it, and then as soon as you're able, hopefully quickly, focus on the next thing. Which means that failure kind of doesn't exist until unless the thing kills you, or permanently ruins your ability to do it. Like if I rendered myself paralyzed or so, like even then there are quadriplegic composers. Like, so failure is often a kind of thing one chooses, and that's at that point quitting. It's not failure, you know. Like failure, if you have a very specific goal, I want to, like, I remember once I knew somebody that because I'm in the Recording Academy and every year I get emails about the Grammys. Hey, I have an album. Would you consider voting for it? Blah, blah, blah. A lot of us get these emails. There was one guy I knew who was so obsessed with this and then didn't get nominated. And he sent out like these apologies, like, I have failed you. I knew I was going to get nominated. It was in my destiny and I didn't, and I failed. And I'm like, in that case, yeah, I guess they did, because they set this one goal, which in my opinion is a ridiculous goal, like to get your heart set into something that is so out of your control. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. Like, if you build your life to be so subject to the whims of the universe, then of course failure is gonna happen. But if your goals are more like a path that you walk and not a specific object that you can grab, then I don't see how you can fail. You can only quit. That said, some days it's hard to remember that. Yes. It's hard to, like, some days emotionally, yeah, the brain understands that a lot better than the heart does.
Obviously you're speaking from a very good position right now. Yeah, you are. But you don't think that way when you're struggling. When you have an expectation and you just never meet it.
I know, you're absolutely right. I've had my versions of failures. I've been fired, you know, I've you know, been yelled at, you know, all kinds of things. And in those moments, if you had appeared and gone, you know, it's not really failure, you just have to decide, I would have probably been like, fuck you. You know, like, now is not the time.
Exactly.
Totally sympathetic to that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But it's like, hopefully it's encouraging to keep in the back of your mind while processing this stress and whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
Like,
don't let it consume you.
And there is tomorrow. Like, mm-hmm, today, as bad as today might be,
I'll probably just cut this part and just have it on my phone every time you need to hear this. Because seriously, sometimes I need to remind you that it's okay. Things are going to be okay.
It's not uncommon for artists and creative people to be neurotic, dysfunctionally emotional messes. But it's funny because Tina Guo was just here at the studio a few minutes ago, and we were just talking about life. And I was telling her, we were talking about how we're both similar in that we have this very good ability to, like, on Monday think, you know, I'm on top of the world. I've got, you know, my bills are paid and I've got work, and I don't just have work today, but, like, there's things kind of in a line where I have work for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a while before I'm suddenly unemployed. And, like, for a freelance person, that is a dream. Holy crap, how can you imagine being so lucky as to be employed? And then somehow Tuesday, none of that matters, and it's like, if you have a job, it's the wrong job, or if you're being paid, you're not being paid enough, or if you have a job, the deadline's too soon to do a good job, or blah blah blah, there's a million suddenly all these stupid, worthless and very counterproductive thoughts get into your head.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing will have changed from Monday to Tuesday, but for some reason you just kind of like swing on this pendulum to the other side, and now you're suddenly, I'm a failure,
you know,
I'm awful.
I think that's why possibly 95% of the people that lives here smoke weed.
And have therapists and, and, you know,
yeah,
need support animals and...
I've been there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's artists make a career, they make professional the act of being vulnerable. So this thing that most people do as rarely as possible and are terrified about, like, people say, oh, I hate public speaking, but I have I'm being trolled by Canvas.
Oh.
Some people will say something like, oh, I hate public speaking, because they have to do it, you know, once per month or once per year at work. And they get so nervous about it, and they spend the rest of their time hiding from it. In creative industries like the game industry or the arts, fine arts, Hollywood, whatever, you basically spend all day, every day, making yourself vulnerable. You know, actors, they audition. That makes them vulnerable. They get the job. Now they got to go be vulnerable on set or on in the voiceover booth or on a motion capture stage or whatever their acting is, they have to go, then go make themselves vulnerable and perform and be potentially told, this isn't working. You're not, you're not cut. Like, this is not, I need you to do this or that or whatever. And suddenly be all and these questions of self-doubt.
When all the production and everything ends and they did a good job, they still are up there, out there being judged by everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have I worked on stuff where we all felt like, this is good, we're really proud of this. And then the worst is, it's not even that that goes out into the world and people hate it, but no one cares. No one even knows about it. And it's like, you're just met with total cosmic indifference. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, so we're vulnerable to that. So it's like, the whole process is vulnerable. And then at the end, there's not even a celebration that it all worked out.
Yeah, and I know. Oh,
so that's God. Why we all end up a bunch of crazy people, because we've made that our job. This process of being constantly like afraid of what's going to happen and feeling vulnerable to the whims of other people in the universe and all the rest of it, that's literally what we do all day, as because of the fact that it's our career. And it's honestly not a good fit for most people as a result. They really end up hating it. I actually, in my mind, when I first was moving here, every composer, you know, every person I met who was in music wanted to do this. It seemed like this universal truth. And I remember there's this person who taught at USC who was one of our instructors. And he had worked for a time for one of the big Hollywood composers as an assistant. And he actually essentially got out of the business in order to just teach music because of his experiences with this other composer. Because he saw, he loved the guy he worked for. It wasn't like he had a bad experience from that angle. But he saw how stressful it could be for this guy. He goes, this guy was scoring a major movie once for like a major Hollywood studio. And they're recording a big orchestra and it's all very elaborate and complicated. And then in the middle of these recording sessions, the big senior heads of the studio go, honestly, we're really not happy with the theme. We like the rest of the music. We like the score. But every time the theme appears, we just don't like it. So we need a new theme. Bear in mind, the orchestra's right there. They're literally telling them this. At the end of the process, there's 100 musicians just sitting there. And he has to take this feedback. So he went into a room and literally played two notes. How do you like those two notes? Yeah, that's okay. Keep going. Three notes. Nah, I don't like the third note. Different third note. Okay, that's nice. Fourth note. Nah, that's not, probably a different one. One note at a time, figures out some ridiculous attempt at a melody, which is a terrible way to work. Wow. But gets these senior level Hollywood studio executives to agree to it, then has to rapidly go and like figure out how to get this melody into the music that has already been written, and the orchestra is literally still sitting there, and finish the movie the way. And of course, he's a hugely successful, very well-known composer because he did it. He actually pulled it off. They were happy and they got it done. The movie came out on time, all the rest of it. And the guy who was his assistant telling me this story said he realized he would never be able to do that. He would basically snap and he'd be like, fuck you guys, this is ridiculous. Just all of that would come crushing down on him. And he realized, I don't want to live that life.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And I remember, up until that guy told me that story, I would have seen that as a form of failure. I would have seen it as like, I don't have what it takes.
Right.
And instead what I realized is being true to yourself and realizing it's not that I'm not enough. It's that I don't want that. And that's actually okay. I should value myself to not subject myself to something that I hate. It's not failure. It's actually a form of success to be that true to yourself. I remember I was like 20 or something, and it kind of changed my life, that conversation. And he was just telling it, you know, I mean, we were at Warner Brothers recording one of our student projects. And I remember standing in the booth next to the console, and he told that story. And I was like, holy shit. And it's like, it kept, and I kind of, over the years, I digested it more and more and came to the conclusions that I'm sharing now. It didn't all hit me like a ton of bricks. But it was one of those, the more I thought about it as time went on, I thought, it's really powerful. We spend so much time making ourselves vulnerable and being afraid of failure and all the rest of it, that it's easy to forget that, like, maybe it's okay to not want those things.
Right. I guess that way of thinking applies for anything in life.
I think so.
Yeah, and it's super. Yeah. It's so basic. Now that I see it, it's so basic. But also, we just forget. We're so into whatever is going on and so, like, focused on the problem that we don't realize that it might be a good thing anyway. I know so many stories about, you know, things like that they miss the bus and whatever, you know, the bus, you know, there's an accident and I was supposed to be in it. And
yeah, it's the famous like example that, so. Seth MacFarlane missing his plane, you know that story?
Oh, yes, tell me.
I mean, it's not really much of a story, but it's very well known that Seth MacFarlane was supposed to be on one of the September 11th planes and missed the flight and literally is alive because he missed the flight.
And
you know, that's I'm sure there's a handful of people that day that was true for.
Oh, for sure.
Who you know, are just like, it's probably hard to process.
Yeah.
That, really. You know, there's, especially the sort of survivor guilt that a lot of people feel. Mm-hmm. I know this is a tangent, but just the idea of like, why should I be the one who lived when all these innocent people didn't? Like, that's a real thing too.
For sure.
It's an ongoing debate. And I think the reason, like when you say it's so basic, it's true, but I think all of us have multiple voices in our head at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
And the learning to kind of like calm that down and find focus can be very difficult.
Right.
But when you do, it's how you're able to kind of, at least in my case, it's how I'm able to reach these conclusions about, you know, is that actually failure, you know, or is failure even actually pragmatically possible? Can't I just try again? Like, what's stopping me? And then if I can try again, did I really fail? Like, it's really hard to even get to a place of being able to ask those kinds of questions and have those kinds of thoughts unless you're...
When you're so angry, when you know that something is not going as you expect to.
Or you're super down, or you're... Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of... I mean, look, you know, I... It's not to say that failure isn't possible. It is, most certainly. I really feel I failed with regard to Mike. You know, I made a note to call him 4 days before he died. And then I told myself, it's fine. I'll call him this weekend or I'll call him next week or whatever. And that decision is why I never got to speak with him again. And I don't see how I can see that as anything other than a failure on my part. But it is at least a failure I can learn from and not hopefully do again. But it is to acknowledge that for all this high, lofty discussion about the idea of failure is kind of more in your head than it is real.
Yes, for sure.
There are real ways one can fail. I failed pretty dramatically this past week or oof. So.
Yeah, that's hard to take.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I am definitely still... Part of why I made that video on my YouTube channel was just like as a coping mechanism.
Of course.
And not just because I missed him, but because I really felt this crushing sense of guilt and failure. And, you know, there are definite failures like this that are real and not to be trivialized by speaking in very lofty ways about, oh, you know, you can always try again and a lot of that. Not everything can you try again. And it's worth not forgetting that in the midst of all this very kind of abstract talk. But failure is most of the time. Grant Kirkhope wrote on Twitter, he and I both put out albums of rejected music. Remnants was what mine was called, which of course features you on the cover. And I can't remember what Grant... I think Grant just called his Rejections or something like that. Mm. But it was the same premise.
Mm-hmm.
Music, mostly music from auditions.
When did he launch his?
Around the same time. I can't remember.
Oh, really? Were you guys competing which one was first?
That's okay. I'll lose every competition with Grant. That's totally fine. He's sort of a legend. So, but yeah, it, he was tweeting at me. I tweeted at him. I replied to his Twitter that I was thinking about, you know, a second rejection album, just because I've got plenty of fresh plenty rejections. Of,
yes.
And
that's a great way. That's a great way to take all those, because you're proud of them. It's not that they're bad. They're actually legit works.
That's the thing. I can separate the heartbreak of being rejected, just the kind of like uncontrollable disappointment that an opportunity didn't pan out. I can separate that from the idea that it's because I suck and I'm not good enough or whatever. Like, the people who made the decision found something they liked the best, and it was something other than what I offered. And it's like, if I'm, let's say I was dating, let's say I went on 3 first dates, and there's one person that just clearly just like, oh man, I want to see them again. I don't need to see the other two people. Like, why is it a bad thing to go for the one that's clearly the best fit for me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all that these people are doing. If I audition for a job and they reject me, it's not that they're looking at me and going, you suck. It's that over, it's like, I'm secondary. I'm making it about me. They're thinking about the one they did pick and the excitement they have. And as someone who has auditioned for jobs and gotten the job, that's a very exciting thing. You're celebrating. You're not sitting there thinking, oh man, that's so awful for the people that didn't get picked. You're like, I'm so grateful that I made the cut and that this is working out. Like, they're not picking me to fuck over the other person. It's they're choosing. And ultimately, if you actually care about the art, like in my case, if you care about video games as a whole, I want people to choose what they think is the best fit, because I want the art form to be the best that it can be.
Oh my God, we could crack here a different topic, but I'm not gonna get into it, but you just made me remember when people hire others not because of their talent but for what they look like.
Yeah, well, let's make a note to make that a future episode.
Yeah,
because yeah, it can be very frustrating to feel like it, you know, like I don't mind when I'm rejected if I feel like it was because they found something that worked better.
Yeah, it's for the good. I had that. The good of the project.
Yep, exactly. The best idea for the project should be the one that wins. I remember a couple of years ago, very shortly after you moved, I auditioned on an epic level for a project. I spent an enormous amount of money recording at Warner Brothers and went all in on this demo, and they kind of led me to believe I had the job. I don't think they did that on purpose to hurt my feelings, but they. I was really sure I had the job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get the email that says, hey, I hate to be sending this to you, but we've gone another way. Just want to thank you again for all your work. And I had done so much work and hired and wrote. I wrote so much, well over 20 minutes of music.
Oh my God, wow.
For this demo. And it was absolutely over the top.
Just for context, how much normally it's for like a demo?
I mean, half the time I'm not even asked to demo. Half the time people just show up with an offer. The other half of the time it's like, could you write a 2-minute or a 90-second?
Yeah, like a normal piece.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like I had a demo for a TV show a little while ago, where like a year or 2 years ago, something like that, where they decided to make the opening credits the thing that they would use to demo with, which was exactly 42 seconds long. So part of the demo was, can you write something good within these constraints? Because this has to be great within 42 seconds.
Okay.
So like, but sometimes they just say, can you send us over some music as a general concept? And I usually will write more than they ask for. If it's a job I'm really excited about, I really, you know, want to get it. And in my experience, what I have found though is that it doesn't actually really increase my chances of getting the job to give them more than what they want. Like, they're looking for something, whether they know what it is or not, and giving them a ton of stuff. And the calculation was always, if I give them a lot of options, one of the things in there will be what they want. And it's like buying multiple lottery tickets. I'm increasing my odds. That was the mental calculation.
But is that a guarantee they're going to listen to everything?
That's definitely true, and also, at the goal is to find the right thing, not the most amount of things. And sometimes it might be the best choice to go, here's 1 minute of music. And if this is not, I'm so sure of it that if you don't feel sold, then you should feel good about hiring somebody else. Because this is what I want to do for this project. Right. And I've done that before too. I've done that where I'm like, no, this is, because obviously the whole thing is very collaborative. So that was also part of the calculation on providing a lot of options, is to go, I'm not married to any of these. I want us to work together to find something together.
Right.
It's not just me handing you finished music and going, you better like this.
Right.
I want to collaborate. And I like to kind of preview that process by giving options. But for some people, that's the right way to go.
For
other clients, they want to be told the vision.
Exactly. Also, there are some producers or whatever, they just need the stuff. They don't want to deal with it. They don't want to have meetings and discuss the process, or for them, it's probably just better to just get the stuff and get it done.
The Banner Saga guys were like that. Anytime I ever asked them, not what you just said, but the thing before that, where their whole thing was, it's not that they didn't want to collaborate, but they were like, our goal is to find a composer where we just know we have the right person, so we just turn them loose to do what they do, and we don't have to like micromanage and guide the process too much. We just want them to feel free and trust that we've chosen the right person. It's the way you hear directors talk about casting an actor, where they're like, if I've made the right casting choice, not every director would agree on this philosophy, but some directors feel like the right proof of the right casting choice is that you just turn the actor loose and they just, it's just magic.
They deliver.
You don't have to you don't have to constantly like tell them too much of that, a little less of this, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, the reason I brought up that demo from a couple years ago where I was really sure I had it and then I was so heartbroken was that I remember the thing that made me feel better about it eventually, after I kind of got over the heartbreak and the massive feelings of failure, was the audio director who was managing the audition process said he personally really wanted me. It was between me and one other composer. And the creative director was the ultimate decider. But this guy, the audio director, from his point of view, I was the pick. But he had a professional responsibility to anonymize who wrote what and play things as kind of a blind taste test for the creative director in order to not bias it one direction.
Mm-hmm.
So he would mix things up and turn things, and you know, during one meeting he would, because this went on for months. So during one meeting he'd play my stuff first and the other guy second, and then other meetings he'd flip it, and you know, or he'd play only my stuff and see if the guy noted. Like, he really went out of his way, and he said at the end of the day, the guy consistently would go, "Ooh, what's this? I like this," and it was just more often than not it was the other guy's stuff. And when he explained that to me, I said, you know, then you genuinely did the right thing. Like, that wasn't me failing. The other guy just had some quality to whatever he was doing that the creative director...
Yeah, it matched better to what they were looking for.
Just gelled more, yeah. And like, if I, you know, I certainly want to, I would never want to be hired under the idea that maybe I'm not the right fit and some other reason got me in there. And I also, you know, wouldn't want to be the hire where the person always had these doubts if it was the right choice. I've actually had that before. I've had situations where someone had their doubts about me. They like hired me
syndrome.
And then I got fired, you know, like they like, and that's much worse. I'd rather not be hired than be fired later.
Yeah.
Which is a lesson that's really hard to teach. You just have to experience it and realize, oh man, should have listened to that voice in my head.
Oh, yeah.
In this case, failure was ignoring the voice. Because it led me here, if you want to think of it as failure. Again, though, I just hear Troy's voice now going, but you learned.
Yeah.
Like, you're able to even tell this story because you did that and you failed, quote unquote, and it taught you something.
I guess it comes down to the wise words of our beloved Bruce Lee. Empty your mind. Be formless like water.
And the odds are you will. You know, short of something that kills you, You tomorrow is another chance to try and
Hopefully. Right now, like I know that I'm not gonna turn off my mic and start painting because it's so hot right now that I can't even feel the inspiration. I need to feel fresh first off.
Thank you for accepting my air conditioning.
Put on music, hope that this time it works out. And if not, we try tomorrow. At the end of the day, my friend is not in a rush. So, but yeah, I need to get it done. I really need to get it done because I don't feel like doing anything else if I don't have that done. And it's slowing me down in a lot of things.
Well, did you have any album that you wish to share? We actually didn't talk about that.
Yeah, and now that I mentioned Bruce Lee, I feel like the album of the day should be Let It Be.
Well, that's very fitting because, as you recall, there's a really beautiful... In fact, we can leave it as a link in the description of this episode. There's a really lovely Let It Be performance of Mike's that is on YouTube of him. He gave kind of a solo recital. I think it was at Zipper Hall from, 5 years ago, something like that. I can't remember the exact date. But it's relatively recently that he gave a performance and played a bunch of stuff, and that video is from that day. He performed all the time, but that was a kind of an unusual event.
Yeah.
And it's very Mike because it starts off where he's playing with you for a good minute
before
you finally hear the melody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had a very specific way of, a lot of jazz musicians will do that, of course, where they work their way towards whatever the actual tune is. But Mike had such a particular touch and musical language, and it makes it so that when you finally hear that melody come in, it's so it's like a cloud's breaking. It's so great. So yes, that's a good full circle.
Yeah, that's nice. But no, actually, I was gonna comment that this Let It Be album, that's the last album that they recorded, and I think it's funny to think that to put it in the failure pile.
It always seemed to me like they chose the right moment to stop, you know, because it's not like they released some album that then was just terrible and they realized we've kind of gone too far, you know. They're one of the few essentially perfect bands that they showed a lot of promise and talent, and then you see them getting more and more experimental and daring and creative and revolutionary, and they completely changed the world, and then they went their ways. And the fact that McCartney is still fucking doing it is just insane.
Yeah. I guess many people will say the failure here was Yoko Ono.
Yeah, but who are we to say?
Don't make that face. I'm actually just saying what I read on the internet. I'm not.
No, yeah, of course she was hated, but I'm saying you said, love changes your thinking and your priority, and who are we to judge that he loved her? Plus, if that hadn't happened, we wouldn't have seen the single plum floating in perfume served in a man's hat. And the world is better for that image, so.
And then, anyway. We have a raffle to do.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you remembered.
We have a raffle.
I need you to do it. I have nothing here.
Beautiful microphone here. Yeah, you want to see it while I do it? I can share. I can screen share here.
All right, so we have our lovely folks who participated in our microphone giveaway.
I want to also say thanks to Earthworks Audio for doing this, because these are not only super fancy mics. It's actually very, to me, they're very cool looking, expensive mics, and they have this beautiful laser design of our podcast, and it's just full of little hints of the stuff we talk about, like music and science and art and video games, and it has a little characters of us as astronauts flying around and coffee, and he has a little portrait of canvas, and anyway, it's so pretty. And if you guys want to see it, it's on my Instagram. I can also link in the description of this episode. But yeah, let's see now who gets to get it, because I have all the names here of the people who participated on Instagram, but also Canvas is so excited. Also, I have people who left the reviews on Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
So here we go. And Nos Burrito.
Nos Burrito. That's a great name.
Nos Burrito. Well, Nos here, Burrito. Yeah, I have this mic for you. Please, please, if you're, this is definitely a Instagram person, please message us. That,
yeah, DM us or DM us,
because yeah, that's one of the rules. If you don't message us, you don't
then
get the microphone.
We're gonna find somebody else. Yes.
Because yeah, I want this to be legit. I want this mic to go to somebody who actually listened to the podcast and appreciate the meaning of this. So, yeah, let's just play fair. Nos Burrito, you have, let's give him 2 weeks to write. How about that? 2 weeks for him to catch up on.
Yeah, I guess we can mention it in the next episode if we haven't heard from them yet.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do that. We also have another microphone, but we're going to give it away a little bit later just to cool things down here a little bit. But
this is too hot to handle, so we got to let it cool down.
No, but literally, it's too hot here, this room.
All right. Successful raffle, successful discussion of failure. Feel very good.
I feel better now. I feel better. I know that I started a little low energy, and yes, I was genuine and feeling weird, but I appreciate you guys listening to my venting, and it is very nice. And I definitely, if you're passing through something like this, this is a good way to get
it. We recommend
through.
You podcast about it.
We recommend you go vent with somebody. And I promise you, you're going to feel better, even if you're not even yet there. But it is nice to have a moment to talk about whatever issue you're passing through. So good luck with that. Good luck with your projects. And remember, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Brushes and Keys. And see you in the next episode.
Bye.